Chapter 25. The news was all over town in 2 minutes, and you could see the people tearing down on the run from every which way, some of them putting on their coats as they come. Pretty soon we was in the middle of a crowd, and the noise of the tramping was like a soldier march. The windows and dooryards was full, and every minute somebody would say over a fence, "Is it them?" And somebody trotting along with the gang would answer back and say, "You bet it is." When we got to the house, the street in front of it was packed, and the three girls were standing in the door. Mary Jane was red-headed, but that didn't make no difference. She was most awful beautiful, and her face and her eyes was all lit up like glory. She was so glad her uncles had come. The king, he spread his arms, and Mary Jane, she jumped for them, and the hare-lip jumped for the duke, and there they had it. Everybody most, leastways women, cried for joy to see them meet again at last and have such good times. Then the king, he hunched the duke private, I see him do it, and then he looked around and see the coffin over in the corner on 2 chairs. So then him and the duke, with a hand across each other's shoulder and t'other hand to their eyes, walked slow and solemn over there, everybody dropping back to give them room, and all the talk and noise stopping, people saying shh, and all the men taking their hats off and drooping their heads so you could have heard a pin fall. And when they got there, they bent over and looked in the coffin and took one sight, and then they bust out a-crying so you could have heard them to Orleans most. And then they put their arms around each other's necks and hung their chins over each other's shoulders. And then for 3 minutes or maybe 4, I never see 2 men leak the way they done. And mind you, everybody was doing the same. And the place was that damp, I never see anything like it. Then one of them got on one side of the coffin and t'other on t'other side, and they kneeled down and rested their foreheads on the coffin and led on to pray all to theirselves. Well, when it comes to that, it worked the crowd like you never see anything like it, and so everybody broke down and went to sobbing right out loud, the poor girls, too. And every woman nearly went up to the girls without a word and kissed them solemn on the forehead and then put their hands on their head and looked up towards the sky with the tears running down, and then busted out and went off sobbing and swabbing and give the next woman a show. I never see anything so disgusting. Well, by and by, the king, he gets up and comes forward a little and works himself up and slobbers out a speech, all full of tears and flapdoodle about its being a sore trial for him and his poor brother to lose the diseased and to miss seeing diseased alive after the long journey of 4,000 mile. But it's a trial that's sweetened and sanctified to us by this dear sympathy and these holy tears. And so he thanks them out of his heart and out of his brother's heart, because out of their mouths they can't, words being too weak and cold, and all that kind of rotten slush till it was just sickening. And then he blubbers out a pious goody-goody amen and turns himself loose and goes to crying fit to bust. And the minute the words was out of his mouth, somebody over in the crowd struck up the doxologer, and everybody joined in with all their might, and it just warmed you up and made you feel as good as church letting out. Music is a good thing, and after all that soul butter and hogwash, I never see it freshen things up so and sound so honest and bully. Then the king begins to work his jaw again and says how him and his nieces would be glad if a few of the main principal friends of the family would take supper here with them this evening and help set up with the ashes of the diseased, and says if his poor brother layin' yonder could speak, he knows who he would name, for they was names that was very dear to him, and mentioned often in his letters, and so he will name the same to wit as follows, viz. Reverend Mr. Hobson, and Deacon Lot Hovey, and Mr. Ben Rucker, and Abner Shackelford, and Levi Bell, and Dr. Robinson, and their wives, and the Widow Bartley. Reverend Hobson and Dr. Robinson was down to the end of the town, a-hunting together. Well, that is, I mean, the doctor was shipping a sick man to t'other world, and the preacher was pinting him right. Laura Bell was away up to Louisville on some business. But the rest was on hand, and so they all come and shook hands with the king and thanked him and talked to him. And then they shook hands with the duke and didn't say nothing but just kept a-smiling and bobbing their heads like a passel of sapheads whilst he made all sorts of signs with his hands and said, "Goo-goo, goo-goo-goo," all the time like a baby that can't talk. So the king, he blatted along and managed to inquire about pretty much everybody and dog in town by his name, and mentioned all sorts of little things that happened one time or another in the town, or to George's family, or to Peter. And he always let on that Peter wrote him the things, but that was a lie. He got every blessed one of them out of that young flathead that we canoed up to the steamboat. Then Mary Jane, she fetched the letter her father left behind, and the king, he read it out loud and cried over it. It give the dwelling house and $3,000 gold to the girls, and it give the tanyard, which was doing a good business, along with some other houses and land worth about $7,000, and $3,000 in gold to Harvey and William, and told where the $6,000 cash was hid, down cellar. So these two frauds said they'd go and fetch it up and have everything square and above board, and told me to come with a candle. We shut the cellar door behind us, and when they found the bag, they spilt it out on the floor, and it was a lovely sight, all them yaller boys. My, the way the king's eyes did shine. He slaps the duke on the shoulder and says, "Oh, this ain't bully nor nothing." "Oh, no, I reckon not. Why, Bilgey, it beats the nonsuch, don't it?" The duke allowed it did. They pawed the yaller boys and sifted them through their fingers and let them jingle down on the floor. And the king says, "It ain't no use talking, being brothers to a rich dead man and representatives of furrin heirs that's got left is the line for you and me, Bilge. This year comes of trusting to Providence. It's the best way in the long run. I've tried 'em all, and there ain't no better way." Most everybody would have been satisfied with the pile and took it on trust. But no, they must count it. So they counts it, and it comes out $415 short. Says the king, "Darn him! I wonder what he done with that $415. They worried over that a while and ransacked all around for it. Then the duke says, "Well, he was a pretty sick man, and likely he made a mistake. I reckon that's the way of it. The best way is to let it go and keep still about it. We can spare it." "Oh, shucks, yes, we can spare it. I don't care nothing about that. It's the count I'm thinking about. We want to be awful square and open and above board here, you know. We want to lug this here money upstairs and count it before everybody. Then there ain't nothing suspicious. But when the dead man says there's $6,000, you know, we don't want to..." "Hold on," says the duke. "Let's make up the deficit." And he begun to haul out yaller boys out of his pocket. "It's a most amazing good idea, Duke. You have got a rattling clever head on you," says the king. "Blessed if the old nonsuch ain't a-heppin' us out again." And he begun to haul out yaller jackets and stack them up. It most busted them, but they made up the $6,000 clean and clear. "Say," says the duke, "I got another idea. Let's go upstairs and count this money and then take and give it to the girls."
"Good land, Duke, let me hug you. It's the most dazzling idea that ever a man struck.
You have certainly got the most astonishing head I ever see. Oh, this is the boss, Dodge. There ain't no mistake about it. Let 'em fetch along their suspicions now if they want to. This'll lay 'em out."
When we got upstairs, everybody gathered around the table, and the king, he counted it and stacked it up, $300 in a pile. 20 elegant little piles. Everybody looked hungry at it and licked their chops. Then they raked it into the bag again, and I see the king begin to swell himself up for another speech. He says,
"Friends all, my poor brother that lays yonder has done generous by them that's left behind in the Vale of Sorrows. He has done generous by these here poor little lambs that he loved and sheltered, and that's left fatherless and motherless. Yes, and we that knowed him knows that he would have done more generous by him if he hadn't been afeard of wounding his dear William and me. Now, wouldn't he? There ain't no question about it in my mind. Well, then, what kind of brothers would it be that had stand in his way at such a time? And what kind of uncles would it be that'd rob, yes, rob, such poor sweet lambs as these that he loved so at such a time? If I know William, and I think I do, I'll just ask him."
He turns around and begins to make a lot of signs to the duke with his hands. And the duke, he looks at him stupid and leather-headed a while. Then all of a sudden he seems to catch his meaning, and jumps for the king, goo-gooing with all his might for joy, and hugs him about 15 times before he lets up. Then the king says,
"I nailed it. I reckon that'll convince anybody the way he feels about it. Here, Mary Jane, Susan, Joanna, take the money, take it all.
It's the gift of him that lays yonder, cold but joyful.
Mary Jane, she went for him. Susan and the Harelip went for the Duke. And then such another hugging and kissing I never see yet. And everybody crowded up with the tears in their eyes and most shook the hands off of them frauds, saying all the time, "You dear good souls, how lovely, how could you?"